Hello, and welcome to How the World Begins Again, a feature series about how women artists navigate a life through music in Ireland today. I'm Elizabeth Hilliard, and in this series, I'm meeting composers and sound artists, hearing about their lives, what inspires them, and I'll share some of their work with you. And if you've been wondering about our theme music, it's from Phonology Garden by Gráinne Mulvey. And yes, that is my voice singing in it. In this episode, A Shared Path, I'm with three composers, Tiffany Q, Susan Gainey, and Claire Fitch, hearing about their drive to compose, who their role models are, and how they need other people around them to support them in their art.
The people that I worked with were really inspiring me, and they gave me energy to kind of find new ways around making this project work.
That's Tiffany Q, an Irish composer and pianist, currently living in London, where she is studying at the Royal Academy of Music. She created a project to mark the 250th anniversary of Beethoven's birth, with 11 works written by 11 fellow students at the Irish Composition Summer School, performed by 11 young Irish pianists. I wanted to know how her journey into composition had begun and who had encouraged her on this path.
Yeah, so actually I started composing at the same time as I started learning the piano, which is at the age of 8. I had this theory book, the grade 1 theory, and at the very back there was a spare manuscript page, just so that you could photocopy it. And I photocopied a few of those pages, and I made a point as to, you know, write a piano piece every month. And, you know, there were quite silly pieces, some more like 5 bars long, but I had great fun writing those. And I never really considered composition as a career. It was more a hobby that I did myself, and I would arrange songs for the piano just for fun. And then when I was 15, I was learning the Berg Sonata on the piano, and my teacher at that time suggested that I take it to Kevin O'Connell, who's the head of composition at the Royal Irish Academy of Music, to analyse the work with him. After we finished analysing it, we did it over maybe 3 weeks or so, Kevin suddenly asked me, "Do you compose?" And I was so excited. I said, "Yes, I do compose." And I brought him a piece that I wrote for choir, 3-part choir, and piano. Kevin was very, very encouraging, actually. And from there, I just continued studying with Kevin privately for about 3 years, and that really got me going.
I love that, how one simple question and taking an interest in a student can have such a dramatic effect on her life. I was curious to hear more about Tiffany's experience on the Irish Composition Summer School.
It was very exciting to be there. So many amazing professors, guest professors who came to. I went there twice, actually, and both times it was Kevin O'Connell and Nicola Lefanu teaching. So they were the main professors. And then we had guest professors such as Simon Mawini and Anne Clear, Tansy Davies. So a lot of people come there. And we have an opportunity to workshop our piece that we write during the course. And, you know, 1 week is definitely not enough time to write a piece. So I remember all of us, you know, being very excited. And then halfway through the course, all the students would be, you know, drinking a lot of coffee, having bags under their eyes because we're all staying up late just to complete it and to, you know, make the most of it, make the most of the advice given to us. And, you know, being so inspired and trying to incorporate all these elements into our new piece.
The way I think about music, it's more like a philosophy as well. So it's a certain mindset, and I have certain concepts that I'm building over time from when I first began composing.
That's Susan Ganey, a composer, sound artist and improviser based in Castle Island in County Kerry.
One thing I'll say is that each time I perform a piece, if I have consecutive performances, there could be a different ensemble playing the piece, then the performance space completely changes everything, you know. So just for example, I have one piece that has gongs, it's for gamelan, and each time we bring the gongs into a different room, you know, the biggest thing about the piece is that the largest gongs ring out, that determines everything. So, you know, for that kind of piece, I have it fixed, but I'm always altering it depending on the space we're in, because that's going to always change depending on the ring out of the gong in the space. Everything changes.
To me, the idea of kind of being influenced by the space and the kind of listening, I'm wondering whether people like Pauline Oliveros might have been, her work might have been important.
Yeah, I mean, Pauline comes up every time, you know, and I'm she was a big influence to me. So when I was in university, I was studying a lot of, you know, male composers, and there was a lot of that happening. And then I started to kind of stumble on Eliane Radigou and all these, and eventually got to encounter Pauline's work. And I was just more about her sonic meditations and, you know, her deep listening. And I was lucky enough to study with her and, you know, attend her retreat back in Cork. I think it was in 2009. I was never the same after that experience. So everything I thought about sound, or, you know, just kind of everything flipped on its head, and I was really switched on to the environment. And now I continue to this day. The one thing from that time that's remained a consistent undercurrent of how I think about sound, I do practice deep listening, and it just means that, you know, I'm really switched on to nature, and that's where my ideas come, really, is when I'm outside walking around or hiking, sea swimming or whatever I'm doing. That's when I'm like, something, I'll hear something, or I'll just be, yeah, that's where kind of, so she's been amazing inspiration to me, and I, you know, and it's continued to do that and form the basis of my own composition and improvisation practice as well. Yeah, and role models are important, and looking at their journey of, you know, how they've carved their own path, and that really inspires me. Seeing composers, you know, if they don't fit into the mainstream of what's happening in their scene in contemporary music, depending on where you're based in the world, that they're, you know, they find a way to carve their own path and create their own scene, because there's many other artists out there who are also feeling a bit lost in the midst of maybe not fitting in here. But, you know, there's many other pockets to this, a lot of stuff, you know, different styles happening, you know, where we can start to carve our own way and create our own music, and people self-releasing and all that is very inspiring to me. I love that empowerment, you know, just taking the reins yourself. You know, we're not all going to get the funding, but it doesn't mean, you know, that that's it. If you're a creative person and you're creative, you can still find ways to do this. Keep going, because there's many more like you, and, you know, by doing this you're opening up opportunities for others and avenues going, yeah, I can do this too.
Thank you.
as a youngster, I didn't really put any limits on the creation and the creativity. I was busy composing at the piano. I was being lent synthesizers by music teachers at school and was, you know, busy working with a lot of people as a kid.
That's Claire Fitch, an electroacoustic composer, a maker of electronic literature and a games designer, who was previously a cellist, and she actually moved to Ireland in the mid-90s to take up a job at the RTE National Symphony Orchestra. I wanted to hear about how she made this move from performance into more of a creative role.
First came over to Ireland in 1993, and the following year I was lucky enough to get a job with the RTE National Symphony Orchestra. It was a big decision after I was offered the chance to come over. I didn't know anybody over here, but I wanted to follow the artistic path, as it were. You know, I think that's one of the things, you know. And then the change is, you know, I didn't move outside the system. I didn't move outside the orchestra. I think I've always been that kind of, I want to find my path. I want to follow my path. I love technology. I love art. You know, I love text and code and sound. And all of those elements were always there. And I just wanted to continue to be able to do that, you know. So the technology was there as very much as a draw. It's both as a limitation and as a means to extend your artistic work. Yes, the cello was there from, you know, a 200-year-old cello. You love playing it. You love all the techniques about learning it. But I loved sitting in recording studios, looking and learning how the technologies would work through that. So, and I was lucky enough perhaps to live through that time when there was a progression from analog to digital technologies. So I found a lot of inspiration from learning that about that progression and witnessing it and being able to see that you could reappropriate sounds, texts and visuals so that you could almost come to a place where you could understand them in the context of your own experiences. That was the reason to change, is that you continue growing as a musician. I mean, that's always there as a musician. The training was there, you know. So yeah, that's what it was. Is I never put any limits on myself in coming over to work as a cellist, but I always knew that there was a lot of other parts of the musician that I needed to keep moving with. And technology actually provided me the opportunity to do that.
So you maybe didn't necessarily need a role model at an early age, but like, is there an element that there's some people that you kind of would look up to and see that was their path and that it inspired your path?
Yes. And I think the people that have inspired me and continue to inspire me are the people that follow their own path. They forge their own ideas. They just keep moving. They keep learning. They keep experimenting and they keep pushing the boundaries. Yeah. People, for example, I met Carol Nelson from Zrazy back in the mid 90s. And she was an incredible inspiration because she was literally just going out and doing it. She was creating her own path in the music industry. Other role models have been performers that I have collaborated with over the years. Raven, a poet who sadly died a couple of years ago, and Cliff Horsman, who were both performance poets. They set up Tongue Box in the Cobblestone. Tuesday nights for me were a wonderful spoken word and improvisation night. And, you know, between them, they really encouraged me to start playing with words. While I had been working in the games industry, I'd done a lot of dialogue editing and working with a lot of character creation. And for me, the sounds of archive recordings are amazing, not only for the sound of the technological sound of the recording, the sound of the recording equipment, yeah, but for the accents and for the inflections of the women's voices. Artists such as Gertrude Stein inspired one of my very first works while I was doing my PhD in Queen's University Belfast. And that obviously then as an inspiration, those kind of voices inspired by the patient and inspirational supervision that I was receiving while I was at Queen's. And my supervisor was Professor Michael Alcorn. All of those elements helped me to shape my artistic voice. Some of the professional relationships have evolved into friendships. And they continue to be incredibly inspirational and important to me. People like Grainne Mulvey, Michael Maguire, Eilish Farrell, and Bernard Clark have been absolutely instrumental in my journey. You know, so it is that process of of working with people, of talking to people, of listening to maybe what inspires them. So I would always talk to people, say, have you seen this film? Have you, maybe if I'm talking to a gamer, have you played that game? Have you read this book? And finding out the people that and the techniques that have worked in history. I think we are all standing on the shoulders, all of us. And it's just good to always hear and see and listen to what other people have been doing over the years.
That's Being Imperceptible by Claire Fitch, created using recordings of David Bremner, Sylvia Roberts, Randall Devine, Anya O'Neill, Martina Murray, Claire herself, and featuring my singing voice, commissioned earlier this year by the Drogheda Arts Centre. Before that, we heard Susan Gainey's Multiphonic for alto flute and bass flute, performed by Susan Gainey and Carla Rees, to be released later this year by the Irish Composers Collective. And we also heard two works by Tiffany Q, Unsterbliche Geliebte, performed by Adam McDonough, and The Raven, performed by Tiffany and me at a workshop with composer Judith Weir in the Royal Irish Academy of Music. Thanks for listening to the third episode of How the World Begins Again. In the next one, Crossing Borders, I'll be with three more artists, Evangelia Rigaki, Anne Clear and Katharina Skembri, hearing their music and finding out about where in the world their music has taken them.